So I realized shortly after joining that it wasn't plugged in or in front of me. So there's that.
Well, what sounded, happened to it, your, it sounded like shit.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, it sounds better now. It sounded like shit before.
Yeah, because it was my headphones.
Huh.
Which, incidentally, you don't appear to be wearing at all, which is unusual.
You did get a haircut, though, which looks great.
Who turned that on? Are you going to turn that off?
Yeah, but we seem to be having an evening of technical difficulties here. Like my mouse just disconnected, so there's that. At least you got your fucking microphone sorted, eh?
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Hello. And welcome to Game of Nodes, weekly podcast from independent validator teams. You keep buying them, we'll keep validating them since, how many years have we been doing this? I was about to say since 2021.
It's coming on 3 years.
Yeah.
In March. I'd say we've all been a good 3 years in the hole.
When was your first mainnet, Schulze? Are you the first one that got up on a mainnet?
For this business, Secret Network, which was in 2021.
Yeah. So you were early 21. The rest of us plebs were late 21, right?
Mid.
Doge was my first though in 2014, if that helps at all.
Oh, we all mined a couple of blocks of Doge on an old laptop. Does that count?
I think it counts. Yeah. If you sold them, it counts because then you may or may not have been in profit.
So somewhere on an old laptop, which probably is on the shelves behind me, that direction, there is a laptop with some Doge on it, presumably, which I've never checked back in on. Probably wasn't very many. Though I should check.
Probably the red choice also.
If it even boots back up. Windows 7.
Might be still mining Doge.
I don't think so. Like, here's how old that laptop is. It was a Sony Vaio laptop.
Oh, those are owned by what? Vizio now or something like that?
Oh, could be. Yeah. I don't know. But it was a laptop. You know, it was like, that was the Sony laptop brand for a while in the aughts. So probably didn't mind too many Dogecoin is what I'm saying. It was not a high-end.
They were ultra premium. Like, they cost a lot of fucking money back in the day.
Yeah, they were all right. They were all right, man. But I can't. Yeah, I mean, let's not get too deeply into Frey's laptop history. I can't 100% remember when I actually got it, how much it cost, or what the specs were. But I remember it being better than what I had before, which was a cast off. But you know, I equally don't remember it being like turbo mega. You know, it did still have. This was still in the days when it had CD drives. Had like, you know, the tray, you know, the laptop tray where the CD drive tray comes out the side. That's cool.
Well, there are a couple of different iterations to that. You had started off with the plug-in ones, right? You had to carry it around separately, and then they sort of built them in, and then they, you know, I had a one of my first MacBook Pros, I actually replaced the CD tray internally with like a caddy that holds an SSD. So it was like before MacBook Pros shipped with SSDs, they had a spinner in them. So I took out the CD drive and put a little tray in there that holds an SSD so I could have SSD on that SATA port and then use the other spinner just for more long-term storage stuff.
Do you remember whenever SSDs came out and I used to show my friends how fast my laptop would spin up after that. Because, you know, before SSDs, it was like 2 minutes. And then SSD brought it down to like 20 seconds. And then NVMe, of course, takes it a second and a half to spin up. But people would lose their mind whenever I would show them. Like, hold on. All right, just sit here and wait for it to turn on. And they'd be like, I don't have coffee. Like, what do you want me to wait for? And then it would be on. And they'd be like, how? How did that happen? What did you do?
I remember installing like Mac OS, whatever it was at that time, whatever version it was. And like the installation process was just amazingly fast. And I was just like, did I just step into a different, like, technological era? Yes. Yes, I did. Rama's asking who's rocking the background noise. That would be me. My very courteous neighbors are constructing early in the morning again. Thank you.
Beautiful. So it is, so I'll say who's running a circular saw. It, in fact, is a circular saw or something.
I would say it could be a circular saw. It might actually be a planer.
Somebody was telling me the other day that because of there's been a lot more bike thefts, what with, you know, recession or well, cost of living slash inflation or whatever. But apparently, so obviously angle grinder, your classic way for defeating an expensive bike lock. But apparently they're very, most angle grinder, is it a blade technically, the disc part? Would you call that
a grinding disc thing?
Yeah, apparently most of them are very susceptible to even a small amount of ceramic. They don't like it very much. And so if you have like essentially just like really thin ceramic layer in like a laminated bike lock, like a layer of metal, a plastic lamination, a ceramic lamination, and then a rubber outer layer, apparently it could really, really fuck with an angle grinder.
Really?
Citation needed on that. Yeah, a friend of mine who's, I feel like, what was their fucking degree? I feel like their degree 15 years ago or whatever was science, so I kind of defer to them on subjects of this. They were like, ah, yes, ceramic, that's the thing you need in your bike lock.
They do have all different kinds of, like, blades, though. You can get diamond blades, which would make short work of a ceramic item.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seemed like if you were very serious about nicking bikes, you'd probably just have whatever the most expensive blade is, because you want to be pulling up your van, knocking through the bike lock, bike in the back of the van and off. Because, I mean, it's happening in the center of a city, right? It's not like there aren't the odd plod around and whatnot.
I mean, from the videos I've seen, it don't look like anyone really gives a fuck anyway, so you could probably spend a good half an hour if you needed to.
Yeah. I did have a friend actually whose dad was a machine shop guy, and he accidentally locked his, or he had that thing where somebody else locks their bike to yours, and so he borrowed an angle grinder, took it on the bus into the city, and then just angle grinded the lock off his own bike, and a policeman did come over and was like, what are you doing? And he's like, this is my bike. Somebody else has locked their bike to it. And they're like, you kind of seem like, you kind of don't seem like a scally, and this doesn't look like a particularly expensive bike, and you seem very intent on this one bike, so we're going to let it slide. they just walked off. They were like, yeah, fair enough. We believe that's your bike. On you, off you go.
Whatever happened to, like, police on the beat? Like, I was walking around this suburb the other day in Melbourne, and it occurred to me that I haven't seen a fucking cop in like years on the street.
Budget.
And there is fucking graffiti everywhere. Yeah, like there's no one, you know, knocking heads when you're spraying on the side of buildings and shit.
There's some crazy stat in this country about how, like, burglaries and things are just, they're just not even investigated anymore. Like, the police just don't have the capacity or can't be fucked, one of the two. I don't know if that's the same in Australia. I thought you guys were like pretty recession proof, so you still probably funded, you know, like investigating burglaries or some shit. But,
well, yeah, like you can call them and they do stuff, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like they should be out on the street just busting shit when people, like, you know,
are you sure they're not
walking around whacking people with the nightstick for doing shit?
Are they not just like busy investigating financial crime on the blockchain?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you were to go down to the police station, I'm sure there is just a bunch of highly, highly skilled police with pocket protectors doing God's work.
Yeah, I mean, they're not walking the boomer beat, null. They're walking the meta beat. That's what's
like happening. It kind of shits me though, because there's just people out here with spray cans, you know, tagging like historic buildings and shit. It's just kind of annoying. Like, I don't want to see your fucking... I don't want to see your,
these
like...
kids, these youths, they're spraying this paint from a can, and they're riding these boards with wheels and playing this music by this band called Fu Manchu, and it's all very annoying. They just keep saying radical and flipping the bird to the man.
I might not mind if what they were painting was like, you know, a Banksy or something, but they're just scribbling their name or something. It's illegal.
Everyone's going to start somewhere. Now, you know what? You're missing a fucking trick, right? You should be going up to them and saying, like, do you want to earn some real money? And by real money, I mean shit coins. How about
put my crayon everywhere?
put fucking Big Bull's blockchain up on this building. That historic building, built 230 years ago, all wood construction, very susceptible to, you know, hard enamel spray paint. Get my logo up on that shit and damn the damage. I'll pay for it with shit coins. That's what I'll do. They come after me, the cops. I'll just say, put it on my tab.
Spray it over that Banksy right there.
Yeah, just spray straight over that Banksy. That's yesterday's news. The future's now, old man. And the future's Big Balls blockchain.com/null.php.
Trademarked.
There is like, in Melbourne, there is a lot of pretty good graffiti, especially around the cities. Like, I'm talking about graffiti art. There's a lot of good murals and stuff around. It's just these fucking tags. They're just utterly ridiculous.
Welcome to Null's Boomer Hour.
Yeah, there's a really good one. I can't remember his name, but there's one like literally when we're close to the train station here and just around the corner, right by the pub, there was a really nice one of Kim Jong-un. But some other twat fucking come and sprayed over the top of it. So, fuckers. Now, I'm trying to find the artist. It's really good. He's got quite a lot of them around Melbourne and Sydney.
If it's not an NFT, who cares? It won't live forever. It'll be forgotten.
I think these are NFTs as well.
Only NFTs are timeless, Null. You know this. All art is ephemeral, except for NFTs, which are inherently timeless and therefore more valuable.
I think these ones are like NFT-erized after completion before they get sprayed over by fuckwits.
Are they sprayed over by the same artist so that only the NFT representation can remain?
They come back and
they burn it. They're like at the physical artifact.
You know, the bubble writing of the 90s, like the graffiti bubble writing. Yeah, sure. It was bubble written over by like, I don't know, Jerry or something.
Probably by the Zion guys, right?
I should put this on like, you know, mobile mode and walk outside and give you a tour of the neighborhood's graffiti in my critiques on each.
Hey, you know, we could do it. We could do an outside broadcast van version. Null's walkabout. Null on the range. The Null Ranger. I don't know. Something like that.
Null on the beat. Take out my nightstick.
Yeah, it could be like one of those.
People might get the wrong idea of that. Null on the beat. Or the radar.
Yeah, they probably would get. I was about to say, it sounds. And I was like, no, it does. It does sound very strongly like masturbation. It very sounds like masturbation, doesn't it? So anyway, what have you been up to? I was talking shortly before the show about what's occurring during this bull market.
I spent the last week reconfiguring a bunch of Ansible and moving just shitloads of nodes to new servers because after a lot of my servers are sort of coming up on a year of use from when I moved a lot of things after the last bull market to more economical servers. And the hard drives are trashed, so they are well over 100% utilization. And I don't mean space. I mean, like, you know, the NAND flash is wore the fuck out. So, been finding new providers, new servers, trying to find all those 7950X3Ds hidden around the place, and moving stuff around, testing out some new providers. I can tell you that Concebo do not have good hard drives.
I just can't believe you went and tried them again. Like, what were you thinking?
Well, they, so it is hard to find. So I don't know, like, how familiar our audience is, probably not familiar at all, with the some of the requirements of these faster networks. They tend to perform better on faster threads than slow threads. So you can have shitloads of threads or CPUs, and it won't necessarily yield a good result. If you have fewer threads that are faster, you can get, you know, a better result in terms of missed blocks. So, you know, the hunt continues for fast CPUs. And, you know, unfortunately, around APAC, there's not a lot on offer in terms of, like, Ryzen CPUs and stuff. And I just came across Contabo. They had a 7900X with, you know, a couple of options for hard drive sizes. It should have been a pretty good indicator that they had, you know, they were denominated in the thousands, not like 960, 1800. Like, you know, they were rounded off to the thousands, which generally tells you that it's a consumer drive, not a enterprise drive. So,
wait,
anyway, they
what?
Had...
What do you, like, the model has rounded off to the thousands, or what are you saying there?
The capacity. When the capacity is rounded off to the thousands, it's usually a consumer drive. You know, nice and easy for the punters to digest.
So instead of 1,000... instead of the actual 1.92 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Or 1,000 instead of 960, or 4,000 instead of 382. So, you know, when they're on the real numbers, it's usually, most of the time, an enterprise drive of some description. Not necessarily always a good one, but...
You know, I never thought about that because I've primarily been a cloud fucking weenie for the last few years, and you just ask for how much space you want and you just go, two is what I want. Megabytes? No, terabytes is what I would like. Yes.
So here at Kingnodes, we've also been building our own shit lately, which has been a bit of an adventure. And man, you pay for good hard drives. Like, it is not a trivial thing. You can stick a consumer 1 terabyte drive in there and get out of it for, like, you know, $100. Whereas if you stick, like, an enterprise 1 terabyte drive in there, you're several hundreds more for a good one. But it all comes down to the write endurance, like how many times you can rewrite the drive and how low the latency is. We've struck a pretty good balance for our archive nodes of what we use in those, but the drives are fucking expensive. But they can be rewritten a bunch of times. So I haven't found, like, any large drives with, like, a write endurance of 3 or higher. So the hunt continues. Well, I'm talking about, you know, drives where you're not dropping 10 grand on a 15 terabyte drive or something.
That's a thing? Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some expensive drives out there. The ones we use in our archives are about, I'm going to say, 1,300 US, I think, per drive.
For what capacity?
15.36 terabytes.
Wow. Wow, yeah. Those are hardcore.
Yeah, our first machine we built has 4 of them in it. With ZFS, but the thing with ZFS is you don't get any like multiplication of performance. So, for example, if you put all those in RAID 0, you would end up with, like, you know, performance multiplication. You'd get basically 4 times the IOPS because of the striping and the write speed. You know, you'd be able to max out a 100 gig network or something on the write speed. But because we use ZFS on archives.
But in practice, that shit doesn't matter, does it? Because it, although the theoretical write of the drives would be higher, they do depend on, like, what's doing the writing to the file system, right?
So,
because almost all of the programs you're going to be running are going to do, like their bottleneck of write speed is going to be at application state machine level, right? Which will be single threaded, or is often single threaded, right? Which is why your CPU is your bottleneck, not your drives, unless they were a bottleneck anyway as well, which they could have been. I could be wrong. I could be way off base. I've not dug into those metrics too much, to be honest, other than on Aptos.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't particularly know like about the actual workings of how those writes occur. How I have to spec my hardware is by looking at, you know, the usage under different scenarios and then size the hardware appropriately to the real world usage instead of trying to assume what's going on under the hood. So, you know, basically on this server, we just overspec everything. And we are, like, most of the time, probably at about 60% of the read-write capacity of that drive, or those drives in ZFS mode. Because with ZFS, you rewrite the drives all the time. It's copy on write. So it'll read a block, and then if it's changed, it'll then write a block elsewhere and then just change the log and say that block no longer exists that it read from. So it's constantly like rewriting the log. It'll write data, write a log entry for that new block, and then it'll delete the entry for the old block. So it constantly rewrites the drives round robin. That's why you don't get any write performance increase, because it actually just writes a block, a block, a block. And it won't necessarily write one drive, then the next drive, then the next drive. It'll actually fill up to level out the drive usage. So if you put a new drive in, or a new VDEV, right? So say if you, people wouldn't be familiar with like VDEVs and all this type of stuff, but basically you can take a bunch of drives as your original set of drives, and then you can add another bunch of drives when you need more capacity, right? And then it'll basically just keep writing into the new drives until it reaches about the same level of usage as the old set of drives, and then it'll start going across all of the drives one by one. But the problem is you don't get any advantage in write speed. You do get a read speed advantage, but not a write speed advantage. So, anyway.
Well, if you need this kind of pedantry for your archive nodes, don't forget to get in touch with Big Bulls Blockchain for all of your archive node needs, because you're in possession of several large machines in want of an application.
We do a pretty good archive. And the thing with archive is that they become out of reach after a while for anyone else to enter the game as well. So once your database is like 100 terabytes, there ain't no one trying to sync that up. So interestingly, so DYDX has been running for what, 5-6 months now? And I have to say it is a healthy network for history. We move around archives occasionally. And so the way our DYDX archives work is we have one in Australia, which is not public. It's just it basically stops once a day, writes a new tarball so people can download it, and then starts up again, right? So that one's like a private thing with a public accessible tarball. And then we have like out in the wild ones, which we can still at the moment run on some rentable hardware at a reasonable cost, but it's starting to get a little bit big for that. But I'm moving one at the moment. So I'm actually just decided to sync it from scratch just to see like how healthy the network is for history. And it's syncing like 2 million blocks a day. And I didn't even have to give it a persistent peer to an existing archive. I just fed it the Pokachu seed, and it found on the network the history it needed and started syncing right away. So there's definitely a good, healthy amount of history available out there on peers.
It's interesting that suggests that there hasn't been aggressive pruning going on.
I think there's a lot of archives. I think I know of at least 6. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that the DYDX team is paying for a lot of archives, so it makes sense that it's healthy.
Yeah. And it's working well. Like I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to wait. As soon as I fired it up and it started connecting to peers, it started syncing. So, but also I think when you prune, so I think you can actually sync history from, and Frey, you might know a bit more about this, but there's like two levels of data. There's the ABCI data, and then there's like the state, right, that gets written. And I think you can sync from pruned nodes an archive if they have it from number one. I'm not 100% sure. The phrase wobbling around there, but I'm not sure if he's nodding or thinking. Well, now it looks like he's thinking. For the listeners,
that doesn't make any sense.
It looks like he's taking a shit.
I think the prune. I think once pruned, you wouldn't be able to, because although you would have hashes of the aggregate, you would have hashes of the aggregate commitments, and you could step back through. You could step back through the tree. You would only have the hashes of the commitments. In fact, that's literally it. You wouldn't have the full block data, unless I'm very much mistaken.
Review incoming, listeners, dear listener.
Well, when Asaf catches up with this episode, no doubt we'll get tweeted if that was incorrect. Yes.
He'll tweet, "What in the fuck is Null talking about? He's an idiot."
I don't think that's how it works. Thread incoming.
your homework's been set, Asaf. But yeah, anyway, so lots of interesting behind the scene stuff going on over the last week or so, which has resulted in less alarms, which is nice.
Well, that's interesting.
And our Pego seems to be working fantastically after the move as well. So,
wait, just up-spec the machine, or?
It's not really the only really. Well, it is a faster CPU, but I can't see how that would change things. It's faster CPU, same RAM, and bigger hard drives. But I don't really, you know, Pego is a really strange thing. It'll hang for reasons unknown to man.
Well, I mean, I think we just. I'm not familiar with the software for it, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's essentially a single threaded application.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Because, I'm almost certain.
Yeah, because relatively obvious reasons why that might be the case in the industry that we work in. Like, what's the easiest way to make sure you don't do something that causes non-determinism on local nodes? Just don't bother with any of that parallelism shit. That's a good way of doing it, right? Which just leaves a lot of processing power on the table, given the dominant multi-core, multi-v-core type architectures that we're used to now, right?
I tell you what, though, so I don't know the architecture of the software, but we've definitely, as validators, made a lot of complaints about it over the last several months. And the last update did improve things significantly. So I don't know if you noticed, Shilty, but I was just distracted by that, whatever the fuck is going on over there, strangling a calf or something. So when you actually, if it stops, right, and you reset it, say if you're like 50 nonces behind or something, I noticed that it like batches now. I'm not sure if it did that before, but if you're way behind, it'll catch up like almost instantaneously.
I think it's done that for a long time. It's always been pretty quick. Yeah, I think so.
Interesting, because I noticed like previously when I'd observe like the history of it, you'd see, you know, if it was going really slow or something, or even like after a restart, it'd catch up and then it'd do a couple and then it'd wait a while and it'd do a couple. Like it seemed previously it'd take hours to catch up sometimes. I just know that now whenever, you know, if it hangs and you restart it, and there's like, you know, 20, 50 nonces or something like that, it'll just do them all in one transaction.
Okay, that I haven't seen. I haven't seen them all done in one transaction, just that they like blast them out really quick.
It actually, on the line now, if you look at the logs, it actually says the amount of transactions that it puts in there, or the amount of, like for all the different types of bridging, it'll actually have numbers for each of them in the log line, I'm pretty sure.
So from the chat, Null, it seems that you might actually be right. Reese says in the chat, you can sync an archive from an event prune node, since events just come from messages, begin, end block, as far as he knows. So all you're doing by pruning that is not pruning the which I guess I, you know, intuitively makes sense. I guess you're not actually pruning the state per se. You're pruning essentially the additional block metadata, if that's that might not be quite the correct technical term. But yeah, I'm not up enough with the pruning mechanics and what you're actually pruning to make a call on that. So I'll take Reese's word for it. So yeah, it says as long as the event prune node is still an archive of blocks.
So I'm not completely off the track.
It seems not, is the conclusion.
By the way, hi, Reese. I sent you a message the other day to which you didn't respond. So,
would you like a commiseration prize, which is doing drill tweet of the week?
Oh, fuck. It's been weeks since we've done a drill tweet.
All right. Say
maybe,
when?
Maybe months. When?
Fuck, man, left page or right page?
I literally have to say it before you start to get an early one.
Well, it's because there's a speed of light lag, isn't there? We're in different continents and whatnot.
Well, I think it's around here. It's probably more speed of copper, but yeah, I take your meaning.
Yeah.
Left, middle. The good ones are always in the middle.
Okay. Okay. So every word in this tweet has a capital first letter. That's all you need to know. So it's formatted like a newspaper title, I guess. Disgusting pear man fucks his hideous orange wife, colon, read more, colon, Reuters.com.
I missed the precursor to that because whatever that pre-conversation you had where your lips were moving, I couldn't hear it. Because Reese sent me a message that annihilated my eardrums through my phone, which is also connected to my headphones. So sorry about that.
Amazing. Well, in conclusion, you didn't miss anything. What was it? Pear man fucks his hideous orange wife. Reuters.com. Nice.
Why is she orange, though?
One of the many mysteries of drill.
Is that,
to read into it what you will.
Yeah, it's like the many layers of drill.
What? The book doesn't say like when it was written or when it was tweeted? That's ridiculous.
There's no quote date. I'm beginning to think a lot of these are fake. They're just made up.
Right? He just comes up to I'm on the spot.
I mean,
I feel like he just sat on his couch and came up with these ridiculous things and didn't even tweet them. Someone's searching.
Yeah, right.
It's like, fuck it. I need to get to the bottom of this bullshit.
Okay, well, so it turns out that if you don't, because I don't know what the whole tweet was because I've now closed the book and put it away. So I just from memory Googled what I just said for the drill tweet. And it turns out that with safe search off, if you type pear man fucks his hideous orange wife, you can imagine what the internet does for you. It does not give you back the Twitter post by drill that you were looking for. It instead has a load of stuff on dating and let's just move on.
So
whatever is rule 6 of the internet, it just don't, especially don't provoke it by adding in the phrase fuck hideous wife. Let's just say that was a mistake. Anyway,
that's now in your search history for the books. Maybe we should have a new type of book. It's like phrase search history. So
I don't think I need to see that.
I do need to make a public apology to Reese. Apparently, I didn't send him a message, and I only thought it.
Wow.
his message to me, which annihilated my eardrums, was. Where's this message? I've searched everywhere. Retort.
Okay. Well, good that your social life is back on track, Noel. Shall we do a news item? There's quite a lot of news this week. Quite a lot of shenanigans.
Yeah, Rama was a little bit thrown aback by the amount of already available news in the spreadsheet. He strongly suggested that we're stepping on his job.
Yeah, well, I thought it was very, very funny that on crypto betting, you can currently bet on SBF's expected jail term. So, according to...
What is crypto betting? Is this some website? Do I have to do something else?
On the crypto betting site Polymarket, according to CoinDesk, you can bet on SBF's jail term. 1% have bet 5 to 10 years. 8% have bet over 50 years. And most bettors' money is falling on between 20 to 50 years. So not financial advice, but apparently a Polymarket is the place to go for whether, yeah. There was that insane...
How long will SBF's sentence be?
Yeah.
Less than 5 years.
There was a great thing, wasn't there, where basically he's been trying to argue like, you know, people will be made whole. It's all fine. You know, client is very, very sorry. And then they discovered, I think, like a Google Doc in the dump of data and stuff that they were they subpoenaed. It was like a spreadsheet. It wasn't even a Google Doc. It's like this fucking Excel file with just like, it was called something like probably bad ideas, lol. And it was like all of his thoughts for like rehabilitating his image. And it was just, again, in a pile of stuff that obviously was going to get seized by the feds. And it's like, I don't know, it's some bullshit like go on Oprah. Or, no, it's not even that. It's like, it wouldn't be go on Oprah. That was Lance Armstrong. But it's just like a load of really, really disingenuous shit. And then obviously it just comes up in court where they're like, but Mr. Bankman-Fried, in the piece of evidence, you know, presented by the prosecution, blah, 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 entitled probably bad ideas to rehabilitate my image, colon, lol. You have stated, you have stated blah, 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 you know, should make the DJs happier or something. Do you think this is in good faith or bad faith? And it's just like, oh my God, he's going to prison for a long time.
I don't have faith he's going to prison for a long time. I wish I did, but after what was that lady that did the she led a medical company that was supposed to like take a drop of your blood.
Oh, Theranos.
That's the one, Theranos. Yeah, she went to prison for like what, 6 years? She's about to get out soon. That seems more egregious than FTX, even though FTX like people lost a lot of money.
But that was the Ponzi company, right? She just like wasn't a doctor, didn't create anything, sold all these fucking shares. You know what?
It was only VCs that lost money. I mean, like world's smallest violin, right?
Yes, for sure. But she still only got, in effect, for how much money it was, a slap on the wrist. I just don't have faith that SBF is going
to. Did she get to keep any of the money?
Great question.
Well, she was very well connected. She was from like a well-off family and stuff, wasn't she? So like a lot of the money, the reason that something happened was because the people who lost money were very well connected and demanded something be done. But like all these things, also if you're very well connected, it's like the scene in Wolf of Wall Street where he's like, but then I remembered I was going to jail in America and I was rich, and that shows him playing tennis, and you're like, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happened to her. She was slapped on the wrist and sent to tennis jail for a few years, which is basically just like a shit college to think about what she's done before she comes out and inevitably raises venture capital for her next venture.
Oh, yeah. You know, she's going to be sent to the rich corner, like, look at the day wall. After.
Yeah, exactly. Or she'll sell the rights to Amazon. Or
yeah, there'll be a book for sure. Yeah,
exactly.
So you said you have
no faith that there's going to be a jail term, Schulze. Would you care to put money on that?
I think there's going to be a jail term. I don't think it, like, people putting down 50 plus years. Absolutely.
So you're
not
thinking 5 absolutely. To 10? Can I put you down for 100,000 shitcoins?
The popular opinion is 30 to 40 years, 28%.
Wait, how many Kerberos do we want to put on this? What shitcoins do they take on this betting site anyway?
You'll have to get them out of storage, i.e. fucking boot up the network again.
Boot up the network.
Presumably this is Ethereum or some L2.
Yeah.
Powered by Polygon and Lemur. Yeah.
Okay, so second, you know, Second Hang best piece of news of the week. All right.
Well, we're still not off this yet. Firstly, I looked up this Polymarket and it is fucking amazing. I think this is going to be my new homepage. But I want to know, and maybe this is a follow up, like how they actually record the results on here in a, you know, decentralized manner so that, because these are all very, you know, user input type things, whether or not these things happened. Do people like vote on them after they become a free region?
Like a degeneracy oracle where.
Yeah, I mean, it would need some kind of oracle, right? Oh, here's another one. Like they've got the top ones up here. So the top ones are the presidential election winner 2024. You know, they don't say US presidential election winner, so they're just assuming that the entire world only thinks about the US. But looks like we're going to have a Trump president.
Which is true. Which is true.
Ethereum ETF approved by May 31st. Doesn't say the year, but I'm assuming 2024. That seems unlikely.
By ETH.
Good
now.
Point. This is pretty like weak that it didn't say the actual. Oh no no! It says it in the rules. The title itself says just May 31st, but in the rules it says this market will resolve to yes if any spot Ethereum ETF resolves receives approval from the SEC by May 31st, 2024. By 12 p.m. Eastern time.
Ah, copy. So the chance is becoming less and Americans. Less. Yeah. There is the SBF
time,
one.
Not UTC, fucking Eastern time. Not even PST, not even like the time zone of tech. The time zone of what?
No, I think that makes sense because it'd be the New York Stock Exchange is Eastern time, right? And so if it's an ETF, it'd probably be based off of that. So I'd give it to him. I think that makes sense. And the ETF probably assumes US ETFs anyway, right? Because I think Canada actually has an Ethereum ETF already.
Oh, I mean, yeah, probably. But,
not that I'm defending them too much. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying. Eastern time makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So, interestingly, out of the top four, one of them is the presidential election winner, which the top one at the moment is Donald Trump. But then the number four is Trump convicted of felony before election. Overwhelmingly, yes.
I mean, the more interesting question really is not who wins the election, but does the Electoral College actually say, whoa, hang on a minute, you can't be president because of the other thing, which probably won't happen. I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with whether or not the Electoral College is just a like a rubber stamp, or whether it actually would ever say our job is oversight and we are going to say nope.
Can a felon be the president?
Yes, but certain types of felony disbar you, right? So I don't know in the US. I know I'm pretty certain here if you're convicted of treason or high treason, you can't hold high office. Like it's really specific.
Wait, hold on. We got to stop for a second. What's the difference between treason and high treason? I didn't realize there was a difference. I thought one was like how dramatic you were going to be when you said treason, right?
Treason is you're going to prison. High treason is going to prison for life. But they're just, it's degrees of the crime. I don't know the exact definition, but I think you could probably commit treason with a fuck up, but I think you'd have to actively work against the state to commit high treason. Like you'd have to like, you know, be a spy or try and assassinate somebody or something. I don't know. I think if you broke the Official Secrets Act, that would be treason, for example. And a lot of government contractors have to sign the Official Secrets Act.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you work on like Defense Radar as a programmer, you could commit treason by accidentally telling somebody down the pub something about that radar system. But you know, you're not committing high treason by telling a drunk person, "Ah, we've got this great new radar. It's quite cool. I wrote some cool code for it." Whereas, like, if you, blew up a building, that'd probably be high treason. You know? I'm gonna have to look this up. Okay.
Well, I just looked it up. In the UK, treason can be classified into two types, high treason and petty treason. High treason is a betrayal against a sovereign monarch, while petty treason refers to disloyalty. So the Sovereign Monarch is the king. So
yeah,
I feel like you can get a high treason pretty easily. Because that's like kind of soft skinned.
Yeah, but that's like olden times. Like now it must be the state, because the monarch's just the head of state. Like the monarch's a proxy for state. But I'm not
okay.
I'm not,
so hold on. Is he?
I don't know about the wording of the law. Maybe it is still fucking written as the monarch. In which case, that's another wild bit of British law that fucking needs an update.
I didn't realize that. Okay, we've talked about the UK's ridiculous royalty enough.
Yeah, fuck those guys. Anyway, petty treason. So the equivalent thing in the US, let's say hypothetically, you incite an insurrection, which would be, I'm pretty certain, high treason in this country. If you incite an insurrection, presumably, this is the interesting thing about Trump going for number two. I'm like, shouldn't, like, if you incite an insurrection against the capital of the US, doesn't that like automatically make you an enemy of the state? Like by literal, like constitutional, what, criminal definition? Like, I mean.
So one thing to be aware of there is that a lot of people believe that it wasn't Trump that instigated it, but that it was Antifa. So like there isn't a single consistent story around what happened. Now I can tell you what I think what happened and what everything else seems to say what happened, but because there's so much like shuffling of the feet around the reality, nobody actually says that he instigated it.
That's interesting, because if you read a newspaper on this side of the pond, they go, Trump incited an insurrection in America on this date. Like that's just how it'd be talked about. Like I don't think even a right-wing newspaper, I think, would be like, yep, smoking gun. It's like cause and effect, baby.
You would think so. But yeah, I know quite a few people that think that it was actually the liberals that that incited the insurrection.
How? Because I didn't see many of them like storming the building.
Exactly. Fox News, probably. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably like the wildest part of that entire, you know, disorienting period where he was the president, was just the idea that some people could read the word Antifa, which obviously means anti-fascist or anti-fascist action, and go, yep, those guys must be the bad guys, and be like, okay, let's take a step back and remember that time there was a bit of a hoo-ha in Europe for about 5 years. Right. There was a bit of anti-fascist action, as I recall. And I still enjoy many video games on the subject. And I've noticed in those video games that the people participating in anti-fascist action tend to be the heroes. It was quite subtle subtext in Saving Private Ryan as well. But I think that
One small takeaway.
I think one small takeaway from that film would be that in general the Antifa were the good guys, and I think that, you know, it's very subtle, right? The condemnation of the other side. You know, they do like to try and present balance, but I think it's quite clear that you're supposed to root for Tom Hanks. I know normally he plays the bad guy, so you know, it's. He's not a very likable actor, is he? So, like, I think, you know, they tried to even it out with that, you know, so you wouldn't automatically gravitate towards his point of view. But they also put Vin Diesel on that side as well. And you're just like, you can't trust Vin Diesel. One minute he likes.
Unless he's in XXX.
Hey. Were there two XXXs, or did I hallucinate that?
I think there were, but I think Vin Diesel was only in the first one.
Was that the one where it was just set in Prague and it had, like, Rammstein in it? It was like. Kind of
that okay. Sounds right. Yeah, I remember enjoying it when I was like 12.
Yeah, it was like okay. I mean, it wasn't The Rock, but it was fine.
I'm sure the second one had him in it as well. Yeah, it did. 100% did.
So we're done with betting on SBF.
Yeah,
we're done with betting on SBF. So the second one.
Oh,
hold up. Okay, please
do not search. XXX movie.
Wow, okay, I could have told you that one.
Why did that not occur to me?
try XXX Vin Diesel. See if that helps.
Yeah.
Look, I'm aware that I am the guy that just searched Pear Man fucked his orange wife and didn't have a good time. But your search is even more obviously going to end in a bad time.
We got to go back to that just a little bit. When you say pear, do you mean like pear as in a pair of men or pear as in like the fruit?
The fruit, obviously.
Okay.
Why is that obviously? It must be a pear-shaped man, right?
I think it's one fruit fucking the other one is the intention of the drill tweet, I think.
Got it. I got stuck on the whole orange shade thing. And so then, which makes me immediately go to Trump. So I was just trying to like.
I think it may have been okay, don't read too much into drill tweets. It's been a long working day for this guy, and clearly he is overthinking this, but I think maybe it was some kind of satirical statement on I'm not even gonna finish that statement. Anyway, so other funny thing that happened this week. It's not fucking satire on anything, Frey, is it? It's just a drill tweet. It doesn't mean anything. It's just monkeys hitting typewriters. Anyway, two Binance execs were detained in Nigeria the other week because, you know, there's this whole money laundering thing. I don't know if it's like the government exercising arbitrary control, not clued up enough on the internal politics of Nigeria at this current time to make a call on that. But one of them is Ramadan at the moment. One of them asked to go to mosque. And then slipped his captors and escaped the fucking country, like James Bond style, this Binance exec, and fucking escaped the country and gone like that. Whoosh. Presumably just like, oh, I need to go do a bit of praying, as is, you know, right at this time of year. Nip to the toilet for a slash. Did the like cartoon thing of climbing out the toilet window, the runs to the airport, and fucking A. Well,
do you think he was playing?
It sounds like he was like.
It must have been helped,
collected obviously. By the CIA.
You would think. I think both the execs are. I think both of them are actually American citizens. So you would think that potentially there would be somebody from the U.S. government making contact with them to be like, "Hey, if you can slip your captors." And the only thing that made me think that it was just completely independently done, and maybe he had just cashed down his pants or whatever, was that it was specifically they managed to jump a flight basically to somewhere in the Middle East, just like a relatively short haul connecting flight. So it might have been a case of literally just being like, what's the nearest flight that he's leaving in an hour and that I have the money down my pants to pay for?
Well, did he even need money down his pants? Like, Binance, all he had to do was go to the crypto ATM, punch in his seed phrase.
To be fair, he must have had his passport with him to get on the plane. So maybe it was simply enough to go up to the desk and be like, look, I have been detained by the government unlawfully. Here is my passport. Let me get on this plane. You will be repaid by the Binance Corporation.
I have to say... On what country would that work? Going up to the teller and be like, look, your country's holding me hostage. I'd like to fuck off now. Can I get on a flight? It certainly would work in Australia.
There's people pay by the airline. I don't know.
They're also like, either way, I feel like that's some kind of treason.
It probably is. Who knows? it is aiding and abetting, isn't it? It is aiding and abetting. One of them is still in captivity in Nigeria. The funny thing being, the one that is still in captivity is apparently one of the main voices in Binance who actually is responsible for dealing with money laundering. So, basically, whatever's going on with that. I just like the idea of some crypto finance bro who's like working for a massive crypto company in a shirt and tie doing a James Bond out of a toilet window to escape from Nigeria.
Oh, that's funny. I can say for certain that I would have had Mission Impossible music playing in my mind when I was escaping, not James Bond.
I would have been running down the street going, fuck, 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 fuck.
Do you remember the first Mission Impossible film with with Tom Cruise in it. It was a good film.
It was great. I mean, I've enjoyed the original ones I've watched.
Yeah, where he came down the thing, right? Yeah.
It's actually it's aged really well. I mean, all the other ones are kind of shit, but that one's aged really, really well.
It's amazing that they're able to just like delete his shortness in those films.
And his center tooth.
They have so many tricks, don't they?
His what, Schultzy?
Center tooth. Have you not noticed that? Tom Cruise has a tooth right in the center. Like, if you seem like, I shit you not, look it up. They try to always get him like from at an angle like this, because if you get an angle like this, you don't see the center tooth. But if you do see it like from straight on, he has a tooth right in the middle. There's like two scenes I've seen it. I think one's in like Top Gun, the original Top Gun, and I think Legend. I think those are the two movies I've seen it.
Oh my God. This search did not yield porn, which is nice. Oh yeah, yeah, it is right bang in the fucking middle. That's a bit weird.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah. I'll never look at him the same again. He's short and got a center tooth. Weirdo.
Yeah, what's the secret to Tom Cruise's uni tooth? Tom Cruise's teeth have been at the center of rumors and controversies.
Wow. Well,
the black copywriter earned their shit salary this day. Amazing.
What else is in the news, the fray?
Do you hear about the Celsius thing? They're basically clawing back money from their customers to pay their other customers. That's pretty funny.
I think that's really bizarre. First of all, because I was one of the customers getting paid back. Yeah. I had money in there, not a lot, but enough that I actually like got the payout, I don't know, 2 weeks ago for it. I don't understand the clawback thing. Apparently customers that had over 100,000 withdrawn, they want to pull back. What?
So, right. My limited understanding of this, what happened is there are a certain amount of customers that just before it imploded could tell it was going to implode. So we drew their money and that accelerated the implosion of the company, right? Which is a bank run, right? And they had their pants down. I don't think anybody reasonable has any fucking sympathy for these fucks. Anyway, they're now obviously trying to repay people that lost money. And so they're getting in touch with people that did those large withdrawals in the run up to it, like specifically like the final day or the final few hours when it was falling apart. And they are saying, we are inviting you to give the money back so that we can repay our customers. And if you don't, we're going to pursue legal action against you, which begs the fucking question, you and whose fucking army? Because if all of those people get together and go, yeah, okay, we'll fucking see you in court, well, then these guys are going to fold like a packet of crisps because they're already fucking bankrupt. It's not like they've, oh, yeah, it's us and a fucking army behind us. It's like, no, it's you in a bankruptcy court and like some fucking court-appointed lawyers or whatever. Like, it's not like the most terrifying thing in the world as far as I can tell. I mean, because presumably the people that were taking out more than $400,000 were institutions. Like if you're a hedge fund or something and fucking Celsius come up to you and they're like, we're shaking you down for 600 grand or something, you'd be like, yeah, fuck off.
And what kind of legs would they have to stand on in court, right? They'd be like, I'm going to take you to court. Under what pretext, first of all? Under second of all, you're going to go after the people that have the money to fight back?
Yeah. And also, like, what jurisdiction would that work in? It's like, yeah, okay, you can sue people for a whole bunch of shit in the US, but, like, try it in a bunch of other jurisdictions, and people are going to be like, yeah, come at me, bro. Like, you can get thrown out of court, and you're going to be made to pay my costs. So, yeah, it's super weird, isn't it? Like, but I do like just the insanity of, like, oh, we have to repay people, so we're going to, like, threaten to sue the people that didn't lose money. Ah, love it. Absolutely love it. It's peaks. What is it? Circle bankruptcy? I don't know. It's something like that. It's some kind of
circle bankruptcy.
it's some kind of circle jerk, like every situation and every drama in crypto, but I'm not sure quite the definition of this one. So yeah. Do you wanna crack out a piece of news now? Get out the spreadsheet, do some honest work.
Fuck me. I have to load up the spreadsheet. What are we
gonna do? Episode. I noticed that Usurper, who's supposed to be on fucking holiday and is probably listening to this podcast this exact fucking second, is in the spreadsheet looking at the news. So go back to your holiday, usurper. What the hell, man? Be on the podcast or be on holiday.
Enjoy your Mojito and pool. You haven't put a cross through the ones that you've read, dude.
We could talk about Cosmwasm on the Hub again.
Wait, did we have Cosmwasm on the Hub drama last time? At the time before? At the time before that?
Well, now there's actually a vote up for it.
Yeah, will it pass?
Right now it's at a yes, but only 8% turnout so far. So probably not, but there is turnout.
I mean, as we've said before, if you get Cosmwasm on the Hub, then maybe the Hub will have a purpose, but probably not.
That's kind of my take as well. Like, it needs something. Why can that something not just be... with full understanding that we already voted yes. So with that context, I see it as a good thing.
No.
No? You have no take there? You have no opinions on whether
Cosmwasm should be in the Hub?
I don't validate the Hub and thus don't give a fuck.
Beautiful.
but don't they have Cosmwasm? Like, neutron? It's basically...
Wow.
Atoms, yeah, right? So that's the main argument against Cosmwasm in the Hub is that giving it to... putting it on the Hub means it takes away from neutron. And the problem with that is that still doesn't give Cosmwasm the Cosmos Hub a purpose. If they start moving forward with getting IBC going and getting fees going on it, I think that the Hub would have a lot more purpose and suddenly have like actual funding methods. Until then, it still is completely worthless. Like technically,
When you say IBC in that situation, what do you mean?
The fee middleware for IBC.
Okay.
So there's actual revenue streams coming in. Right now, there's no way of Cosmwasm or the Cosmos Hub to actually have revenue streams.
So the funny thing about like that particular revenue stream model, and like I appreciate that relayers are currently running loads of infrastructure and not getting fucking paid for it. I do get that. I do understand that. I do understand that it can't scale. How the major internet trunk providers like shuffle around packets and whatnot is that when they hit each other's infrastructure, they just take each other's traffic. So it's kind of back to like, I wrote a very sleep deprived and like half baked blog post the other week about how IBC is stateful, right? It has to be in order to do the packet exchange. It's like, it's request ACK type thing. It's inherently stateful. Relayers are stateful, right? It's volatile, but stateful, resulting in an end right. And what's the blockchain I'm thinking of? It's not even actually a blockchain, but am I thinking of Arbitrum? I might be thinking of Arbitrum, where there is a concept like relayers, they shuffle the packets between nodes, and then the writing to the blockchain is like an afterthought, right? But the protocol is the network, I suppose, in that sense. Like as in the people that would do exchange between any system at the edge, like a different protocol, a different network, a different blockchain, are also inherently incentivized as a part of, like, it's part and parcel of being a node operator, is that you have like the protocol itself is an interop layer. Like there, and it just so happens that one of the things it interops with is a blockchain, which is your home blockchain. But the idea that your state machine should only write to that blockchain, and not in fact be instead directed to some other blockchain that has a compatible client for you to write to, is like somewhat arbitrary. Anyway, that's it in the shower thought. Like, is the incentive mechanisms being tied to the state machine? The interesting thing about the Cosmos Hub, right, is that Cosmos stack, right, is you've got blockchain, ABCI, and you've got state machine, and then you've got additional stuff, like additional plumbing, including the relayers, including all of that stuff, which actually a lot of it is very, very tightly integrated with both the state machine and the consensus engine underneath it, right? So there's an argument for the blockchain should be more generic, although to be fair to Tendermint, the Tendermint stack is quite generic and just orders transactions and writes, and that's basically it, right? even if like ABCI itself like makes quite a bit of assumptions about the state machine, you know, fair enough. But on the whole, that's architecturally, you know, how it's designed and whatever. It's the question is, like, as soon as you start getting towards the interop piece, you start questioning whether the architecture of how the state machine works, if it's going to inherently, if the state machine is going to be inherently special purpose and tied in some way to the working of your interop layer, then those two things being more tightly coupled so that they are a part of the same incentive mechanism maybe makes more sense. And I know they sort of are already in Cosmos, but it's one of those, like, they are in practice, but the incentives aren't tied together. So you're making money from your validator, but you're losing money on your relayer, right? It's very tightly coupled, but it's not economically represented in the incentive mechanism, right? So I don't know. It's quite hard to unravel a shower thought in something more coherent than I don't know how. And so the thing, I guess it boils down to this, right? The thing that's really important and interesting about the IBC verse is IBC. And is the packets moving around, the transactions moving around, and the fact that those transactions and packets are valid wherever they land, as long as the destination accepts that format, right? As long as the protocol is sound, the destination is generic. The blockchain is generic. And I wonder if you should just push that idea further. That's essentially what it is. And pushing the idea further would be, I suppose, saying, well, what part of the Cosmos SDK is actually necessary? In fact, any SDK, in fact, any smart contract VM, like, should you not simply just be writing an interop layer to accept an arbitrary protocol connection and then just get that data onto a blockchain as its storage at rest, but actually use volatile storage for the transaction resolution on top?
Well, I think that's basically what Wormhole is, isn't it? Wormhole is...
conceptually, I think, maybe, yes.
Yeah, I think it's basically a message protocol that they instantiate on the respective chains, and then they have, in effect, relayers that can work in between what amounts to any chain.
Yeah, I think that is a similar model to what I'm talking about. But that's not like... Is that super widely adopted?
It's not super widely adopted. There's probably between 12 and 15 chains that are using Wormhole right now. But I know that they are actively expanding. And in my opinion, they're kind of walking backwards a little bit in that I think the goal that they're going to start reaching for is becoming kind of like Axelar, in that you would have kind of like a central Wormhole chain, quote unquote, that everything bridges into, and then you bridge out from there, right? Rather than it being interdependent, it would effectively become the Wormhole hub, which I'm actually okay with now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, if I want ABC to have fees and to like be bringing in profit, which again, I think is one of the clearest profit mechanisms for basically all of IBC zones, then yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, it's what Noble's doing.
I didn't agree with that. Other than this DDoS prevention, I'm increasingly less and less fussed about fees in general. And I just more and more think it just doesn't fucking work for anything useful. Maybe the whole thing doesn't work. I don't know.
Well, there is a blockchain, I can't remember which one right now, that actually has IBC fees being free. Like, they have a secondary packet type that has IBC transactions are free, right? And so for that, I think it's a really interesting case that you still need to pay for the infrastructure for IBC. Like, the best way to have good IBC relaying is to have a lot of the nodes local to each other on the same machine, right? So that they have really quick latency or really low latency, which has a cost, right? But to be able to bypass the typical blockchain fees is a really cool concept.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess I guess like the background to this is that obviously these days, like, I think a lot about payments. I think a lot about going to a coffee shop and buying a cup of coffee, right? And as soon as you start breaking that down, you're like, the amount of changes you would have to do in order to make that adoption pattern happen. And one of them has to be speed and ease to the consumer, absolutely. But one of them has to be fees. And like, as soon as you start layering on any sufficiently complex set of fees, gas included, number one, you end up in a situation that the gas can become unknowable very, very quickly. I mean, almost all chains, it's an estimation, right? And that means that as a consumer, and particularly as a vendor, who's in a lot of jurisdictions, the vendor is going to have to suck up that cost. They're going to want to know how much that is. And ideally, they're going to want to know what it is ahead of time for accounting reasons, and be able to, you know, calculate it easily without it being an accounting overhead. Otherwise, they're going to go, fuck it. Do you know what? If it costs us another week a year to do the accounting to work out what we're spending at cost at point of sale, it turns out it's cheaper, right? Until we put the accounting line item against it. And then it turns out that the percentage difference between that using Visa or whatever, ClearPay, whoever, I don't know who it'd be, it becomes negligible, right? And then we're moving infrastructure for no reason. And that's before you think about all of the additional things you can get in public networks, like MEV and all that kind of fun shit, where you're like, look, if I'm buying a coffee, I don't want like the idea of like blocks and things like that with like MEV transactions and all that kind of shit happening in it is like, total mad stuff, right? But yeah, like fees is an odd one. I think you like, you take it for granted until you go, well, okay, but is there another model? And I don't have a good, like, it's not like I have a good fucking counter suggestion at the moment for how you pay people to run infrastructure, other than, you know, they offer it as a service and people pay for it, but you know, who's paying for it and on what basis? I mean, like, you know, you look at provision of RPC nodes and there's basically two versions, right? There's poverty, tragedy of the commons, and then there's a foundation paying tens of thousands of dollars for what is a technical service with high availability, right? And it would be hard to... I think if you start from the premise that we're in a situation right now where decentralization is basically theater on almost every network, the reality is all the tokens are concentrated, a lot of the voting power is concentrated, particularly in proof of stake. And you start to go, yeah, okay, well, these networks, they are businesses. The rest of it is theater, essentially. So they should just act like it, pay nodes for professional service provision and then move on, right? Then we go, okay, well, that's problem solved. That's how you would get that robust architecture for payments and whatnot to sort of work. But you then go, it then does beg the question where you go, okay, could we have a radically decentralized future where you are actually meeting a bunch of the things that, so if you remember back to Vitalik's early writings on like proof of stake, when it was very early in the mooting process for Ethereum, you know, some of that stuff around like, none of this stuff, even he sort of said, you know, a lot of the decentralization stuff is theater, unless you can run all this stuff on consumer hardware, on laptops, phones, that sort of stuff. And so, like, I guess you get to moot a future where the provision of the infrastructure is as cheap and as ready as water, right? That's the other flip of the coin where the party can happen. But in the world where you need service provision with all the dedicated hardware and all that kind of other stuff, it tends towards centralization anyway. Like, our entire model and or everything around it currently tends that way, and the fee model as a result is not enough to support that professional level of service provision. Whereas like micropayments for somebody just renting out a bit of extra, you know, idle bandwidth on a laptop, you know, that's a completely different game. And you're like, yeah, fees might be sufficient to trade off against the slight bit of hard drive wear or whatever you'd have for running a small like light client or something on your laptop while you're doom scrolling on YouTube or whatever. I don't know, like I don't know. The more I think hard about payments, the more kind of hopeful I get about the solutions that are going to come along in 5-10 years for actually radically decentralized solutions to economic systems that only exist in cyberspace. But it's going to be so different to what we currently have now. I don't know. Because what we have now is just the things that support it. Everything just seems like tragedy of the commons, like in every direction. And you can see from the business models that we as node operators and infrastructure providers have to do, which are not that dissimilar to, you know, traditional enterprise infrastructure contracts. You go, well, yeah, okay, so this is the world we live in because that's what we actually have to do in order to survive, you know. Once you peel back the curtain, Null's busy filing his taxes, of course, there.
He is. That's an important part. One thing I've thought about a bit is having something of like a, I don't want to say community fund, but let's say there's a secondary type of community fund that works as effectively an escrow for fees, right? Where it's too common that you send out a transaction, the estimate wasn't right, you need to increase it by like 50 gas, let's say, right? I don't understand why there isn't some level of escrow where once that estimate is done and the payment is paid, the overpayment, instead of, like, I don't see why that overpayment doesn't go to like an escrow system or an account, which would then pay the difference on accidentally underpaid transactions for small things. For like a big, like a contract execution, maybe less. But if you're doing a basic send or update your validator transaction, those have a pretty consistent gas, right? If it goes down just a little bit, it goes up a little bit. I don't think it should require sending a new transaction, pull from that escrow. And if it's overestimated, push the rest into that escrow account. I haven't thought too much about this, but it's something that it seems like fees are an ongoing issue within blockchains. And it seems like there's solutions that can be found that doesn't mean just a failed transaction. Like failed transactions shouldn't happen unless something egregious happens, in my opinion. Or like you're not actually providing the gas or whatever. Like if you don't have the gas to pay, great, fail. Otherwise, let it go through.
I just wonder if like the solution is to... Because fees at the moment are mainly to stop spam, right? That's kind of the reason. So, I mean, there are a lot of different models for how you store state on blockchains that involve, like, one of the things you can do, and again, I would think this because a lot of the stuff I look at the moment is privacy stuff, right? Is if you store less state, right? If you store less stuff and keep more stuff private, you store less state. And it's a lot harder to clog up a blockchain with random shit, right? And then your need for fees does become substantially lower. I mean, at the most extreme level, you can store tiny root hashes and then just get linear, you know, just small linear growth of these sorts of things. And that's an extreme example, right? But in that world, you're like, well, you know, the marginal cost to node operators is effectively zero, trending to zero. You don't need fees to prevent spam, let people spam away. And if you make the transactions private, you prevent certain types of spam, like bots, because you can't MEV you can't do MEV, flash attacks, any of that stuff on individual transactions if you can't introspect the transactions in the mempool. It becomes a lot harder. So the only situation, in fact, where you can attack a transaction is if you are the person with the transaction and you know before the transaction settles that you're about to lose money, if you were also a node operator and could type at the speed of light, you could maybe do something to modify your binary, stop your binary, reload your binary with changed code in order to, but that's like theoretical to the point of comedy that you could modify a mempool and attack the blockchain on behalf of yourself to merely reverse your own transaction. Maybe there's a way of doing that I haven't thought of that doesn't involve a comical setup, but I don't know. It feels like you can attack a lot of these solutions by, you know, like practical Byzantine fault tolerance relies on you loosening some of the assumptions around asynchrony, like to have partial synchrony and stuff like that, where you go, okay, well, we're gonna have a timeout that's gonna make sure that it is eventually synchronous, right? You can start saying, well, okay, what if our default is that fees should be zero, but that you could specify fees on top for the XYZ reason to enhance security in XYZ situation, or like, you know, on things like privacy, like the default should be that other people other than the sender cannot introspect a transaction, right? And then suddenly you start adding stuff on top that means that you get additional things for free. I don't know. Like I say, we're very firmly into my shower thoughts section here, so apologies to anybody listening, but I've just turned in a draft paper, so obviously, so it's there's just a lot of you know when you've just done a piece of woodwork and you haven't swept up yet, and there's just like all of the sawdust is on the floor, and in the sawdust, like, so there are some useful offcuts, but they're buried in the sawdust. And you do that thing where, you know, you kick around with your shoes in like the kind of ankle deep sawdust, and you're like trying to find any useful, like, you know, there's like magic offcuts that are like about a centimeter big, and they're like that really useful size for like door wedges or propping shit up and whatever. And you're like, oh, I bet there's some good offcuts down here. I feel like I'm at that stage. Like, I've just got the majority of a thing done. I'm just kicking around in the sawdust for any other like half baked ideas that might be useful for the future. So I'm sorry for subjecting you to it, Shulzi. Anyway.
You're like that dad with that box filled with useless fucking offcuts that you never use.
I literally under my desk here right now, because I was literally doing some the other day. I have a box of offcuts that I have yet to sort. It's a very exciting box. There's some real good offcuts in there. I'm pretty pleased.
I feel like you don't have enough to do if you're spending your time sorting offcuts. Although, you know, it seems like you do have spare time these days now that you are not painting your little men.
No, that's true.
Not painting your little men.
Noel has a very, very dim view of hobbies, because Noel has decided to work every single hour God gave him. Whereas, yeah. Some of us have decided since having children to pick up hobbies again, because otherwise we'll go fucking insane.
So, my guy, I'll have you know that I left the house yesterday.
To do what? To do more work? Did you go to the data center? Is that why you left the house?
I bought a charge cable for my mouse.
That sounds like very unproductive time, Noel. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I didn't realize you went so hard.
My mouse stopped working. I haven't been to the data center in a while. I don't intend to go there unless something blows up. Yeah, I have been – I kind of want to buy some more stuff to build a Proxmox cluster now, though.
What?
Proxmox, the hypervisor. I've rekindled my love of hypervisors. And, Proxmox is like the most annoying one to use. So I figured that would be a great place to start.
I don't even know what to say to that. I don't want to use, so why?
Why use something easy when you can use something hard?